And now, we begin the Putting the Excuses Be Gone paradigm into action. Please welcome Dr. Wayne Dyer.
Pleasure to welcome everyone to today's online seminar with Dr. Wayne Dyer, putting the excuses be gone paradigm to work in your life. And how the seminar will work today is that Dr. Dyer will speak for the first part of the seminar, and then we're going to be taking a short break, and then Dr. Dyer will take some calls from listeners who really want to change some self-defeating habits. And Dr. Wayne Dyer will take you through the excuses be gone paradigm and help you eliminate some of the tired excuses that have been holding you back. And I'll give you the phone numbers to have on hand when we do open the phones at 4:30. You'll be able to call in. And in the second half, Dr. Dyer will take your calls. So here's the numbers, 866-917-7507 in the U.S. or Canada, and also 760-918-4347. Dial your country code first for international calls. And also these numbers are posted on your player window, and we will be opening the phones a little bit later at 4:30. And now, right now, I'd like to welcome Dr. Wayne Dyer.
Thank you, Diane, and welcome everyone who has signed up, and many of you have. I'm grateful to have you there, and I hope to make this 90 minutes very useful and practical for you. I call this the Excuses Be Gone paradigm. I've written a book, I'm sure most of you are aware of that, called Excuses Be Gone. What I want to do is just before I go into the paradigm, I just want to take two of the concepts for living an excuses-free life, and then run through the there's seven questions that I have. I didn't really write these. I listened and allowed them to come through me, and it goes way back for me in my life. When I was a young doctoral student, I was being trained to be a counselor and a therapist on some different kinds of philosophies. One was Carl Rogers and client-centered therapy. Another was behavioral therapy by Skinner, Robert Kharkov. I mean, there were a whole group of different philosophies that we were being presented with about how to be an effective therapist. And then I took a position as a professor at a university in New York City, St. John's University. And I began to open up a counseling practice of my own and started looking at what kinds of things could I do that would help people to really change. Because so much of what I had been taught at the university and through the academic training of mine was about active listening and about being client-centered and about not imposing any points of view and always allowing it to come out of the client rather than my giving any instructions. And what I found as my practice grew and as I worked with many doctoral students and helping them to become effective counselors in their own schools and healthcare centers and hospitals and so on, is that you really don't, if you want to get into a place in your life where you want to get some help, you want to get into therapy, there's absolutely nothing in the world wrong with that. In fact, for many people, it's a very useful thing. But by and large, when you're working in a counseling practice and you're trying to help people, or if you want to help any other human being, I discovered that you don't have that kind of time. You don't have the luxury of 25 sessions or 2 or 3 years, and we can examine all of the things that happened to you when you were a child and what kind of things are still impacting you today and so on. I began to realize that there were certain kinds of things that if you did them in a counseling practice, in a helping practice, that you could help people to change, and you could help them do it rather quickly. So I began to take notes on those kind of things that really worked. Because if a student would come in or a young person would come in and say that they're looking for a job because they're unemployed, and as a counselor, I would say, well, how does that make you feel? And then endlessly getting them to try to find the answer to that. 40 minutes would go by. I might never see that person again. And they're still in a quandary wondering how to express how they feel when what they feel is they want a job, you know, and they need someone there who can be specific with them and so on. So I wrote a book a few years after. I wrote several textbooks about counseling. One of them is called Counseling Techniques That Work, and Group Counseling for Personal Mastery, and Counseling Effectively in Groups. And then as I began to develop this practice of working to get people to change quickly, rather than this idea that change is something that takes a very long time and it's very involved and it's a deep process and you have to have all kinds of understandings and so on, that it began to occur to me that change was something that you could do quite quickly if you could identify the things that were going on inside of you that were the resistance that you had to this change. And recognizing that the way that you behave, if it's done in a self-defeating way, isn't really the fault of anyone else. It's just a way that you have had of processing events and thinking. Ultimately, now, at this time in my life, at the age of 69, I've come to realize that so many of these self-defeating patterns are really excuses. But at back in the early 70s, I was taking notes, and I wrote a book that was the book that really put me on the map. It was called Your Erroneous Zones. And this book was really a sort of a self-directed tome, if you will, on how to change self-defeating behaviors. And it became a huge, huge bestseller, and in fact, today there's something like 55 million copies of this book, and it's still a huge seller, and it's used in counseling classes all over the country. I think 750 some universities are using it as a textbook, and it was basically a common sense approach to changing self-defeating behavior, and it worked on a philosophy, and the philosophy was this: if you want to help a person to change, which means if you want to help yourself to change, or if you want to help somebody else, if you're a parent, or if you're, you know, just a helping person in any way, there are three things that you needed to do. This is how I saw it at that time. The first of these three things is to identify the behaviors that are self-defeating. And that's how Erroneous Zones, every single chapter of Erroneous Zones was written, on the basis of my giving this specific kind of subgrouping, if you will. So you identify whatever it is that's going on in your life that you don't like. I'm depressed. I'm addicted. I'm overweight. I can't get along with my family. I'm unhappy. I'm weak. I'm sickly. I'm whatever it is. I'm shy. I'm nervous. I'm afraid. I'm aggressive. All of these kinds of things. These are behaviors that are going on in your life. Or I don't make enough money. Or, you know, I can't get a job. Or people don't like me. Or whatever. So you identify whatever behavior it is. And so my teacher was Abraham Maslow. And I was very blessed to have him as a teacher. And one of the things that he had said over and over again is that if you want to help somebody to change their behavior, you do not want to focus on the problem for more than a few minutes. If you have an hour, it shouldn't last more than 7 or 8 minutes. Because if you understand that you become what you think about, and you go into a counseling practice or a helping session, and what you're talking about and what you're thinking about is what's wrong. And if you get what you think about, whether you want it or not, then you're going to leave that counseling session. I used to always say counseling or therapy is for better or for worse. So that if you go to somebody and talk for 1 hour about all the things that are wrong with you, and then you get up and leave, what you have done is reinforce the idea of all of the things that are wrong with you. Then you've aligned yourself with an energy that will match up and offer you opportunities to keep staying in the very same place that you've been before. And lo and behold, the therapy not only doesn't help you, but it makes you worse because you're continuing to attract more of what you don't want. So you identify it and you do this quickly. Then the second thing with Erroneous Zones was to come up with what are the payoffs that you have? And this is a part of the paradigm that I'm going to be talking about here today. What are the payoffs for this behavior that you are exhibiting? Like, what do you get out of that? And I'll talk a little bit about that, but every single chapter of Erroneous Zones, and whenever I would talk to anybody in counseling, and they would tell me what it is that they are doing that they don't like, or what's going on, or how unhappy they are, I would ask them, well, what do you get out of that? What are the payoffs? And they would say, well, why would that have any payoff for it? And I said, well, because human behavior is such that you, if you don't get a payoff, if there isn't something that you're going to get for it, something that is going to benefit you, even though it might benefit you in a self-sabotaging way, then it wouldn't persist. So we would look at the payoffs. Most of the time, the payoffs revolved around resistance. They revolved around blame, putting responsibility on somebody else for the things that are wrong with you, which is an easier way to go. It's easier, and so on. Much of this is in the excuses be gone paradigm. And then the major emphasis on the counseling or on helping the other person would be on developing alternatives to this behavior and putting them into practice. So that was my three-step paradigm, if you will, and why Erroneous Zones became a counseling textbook in teaching people to become helpers and counselors, because it shifted off of the idea that the answers are going to come to you just by talking about them and exploring them, which is all very much of a possibility. But in the real world, when you only have 20 minutes or 30 minutes to be with that person, you need to have something that is going to help them identify the solution, what it is that they would like to change, come up with alternatives to that behavior, and understand what the payoff system is. And if you only have 10, 15, 20 minutes, then that's what you have to do. So many books and many years later, I wrote and lived a book called Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life, which was really based upon the teachings of Lao Tzu and the great Taoist tome, the Tao Te Ching, which is a book that means the Tao, T-A-O, means the great way, T-E means the virtue of, and Ching means book. So the Tao Te Ching, which was dictated 2,500 years ago in ancient China, it's the book of living the virtue of the great way. And I became a Taoist practitioner at the age of 65, 4 years ago. And the 81 verses of that book, I began to practice each and every day and live them and so on. And basically what that book taught me, and what that year of my life, the year I turned 65, was what to think. And what to think was, for me, it really made me look and examine things like my ego, and to begin to think in terms of being soft, being more flexible, finding my spirit, finding God in nature, understanding that I have an original nature, what Lao Tzu calls your original nature. And this original nature is one of well-being, it's one of kindness, it's one of love, it's one of joy, it's one of spirit. And to think in that way, to think small, it taught me, rather than to think large, to not have goals, but to be in the moment, to not live my life by rules, but rather have internal kinds of guidelines and rules that I follow, and not to complain to other people and not explain, and also to get violence and anger and hostility out of, not only out of my behavior, my daily behavior, but to get it out of my consciousness, to get it out of the way that I process the world, and to see the world exactly the way it is rather than the way I think it should be. That, by way of introduction, brought me to Excuses Be Gone, because after I wrote that book and I did a public television special on Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life, and all 81 verses, and it was a monumentally life-changing experience to live the Tao Te Ching for a year and to write about it. Every 4.5 days, I wrote another essay on each one of those 81 verses, and that's why it took 365 days. And then I began to really look hard at how do you go about, even if you do know what to think, if you know how to think flexible, if you know how to think love, if you know how to think kindness, how do you go about changing behaviors that are so deeply ingrained? And if you've heard my PBS special, you can see some of the books that were very important to me before I wrote Excuses Be Gone. One of them was The Biology of Belief by Bruce Lipton, and the other was Virus of the Mind by Richard Brody. And both of these I examined what it is the biology of belief was teaching, which is that our beliefs are much more important than even our DNA. And the very chemistry of our brain and the chemistry of our body and our very DNA itself, our genetic makeup, was what we're finding experimentally is that it can be altered if we change around the way that we process events and things. And it's the environment in which we think that's more important than the particles that we call our bodies. And so even the practice of medicine is beginning to wake up to this and beginning to see that the big excuse that we use for why our life isn't working is that I can't change my genetics. I can't change, you know, I'm a certain height. I can't change my height. I'm a certain body type. My skin is a certain color and so on. I can't change that. Even that is now up for dispute, especially what we're finding out with stem cell research and so on. I mean, I just read a story recently of someone who had the whole top of a finger, the first knuckle cut right off, and stem cells were planted in that place and were able to grow an entirely new finger, which because they were reprogrammed with a fingernail and everything. So we're beginning to realize that the universe is made up of energy, and energy is invisible. It has no form. It has no substance. It's invisibleness. Okay, and you can call it. Lao Tzu called it the Tao, T-A-O. Some call it God. Some call it soul, divine mind. It doesn't really matter what you call it. It is basically what all form originates from. And then Virus of the Mind was a book that really looked very hard at the kinds of things that we call memes that are planted into us from the time that we are very young boys and girls. And these viruses have as the same purpose as any virus, which is to duplicate and infiltrate wherever there's an opening and to spread from one host to another, whether it's in a computer, whether it's in a body or whatever. But there are other kinds of viruses that we call mind viruses. And these mind viruses are very, very powerful. And we carry them around with us all the time on a regular basis. And we use them. And what I have done is I have taken 18 of these mind viruses, which I call the 18 big excuses. And these excuses constitute all misalignments. So the two principles that I just wanted to take briefly about in order for you to get to a place where you live your life independent of excuses is to think, number one, with awareness. And thinking with awareness is the opposite of thinking with your ego. And because we don't have time to go in, and I've spoken many times about the ego and I've written many books about it and so on. The ego is that idea that we carry around about ourselves that is called the false self. It's a belief system that says that who I am is what I have and what I do and what other people think of me. And so I spend my life being consumed with those things. And who I am is separate from everyone else. And so I'm always in competition. And who I am is separate from God and so on. But when you start thinking with awareness means that anything that is going on in your life, I don't care who you are, what it is that you would like to change about yourself, whether it's an addiction that you've had for a very long time, whether you've been overweight since the time that you were 4 years old, whether you've always been shy, whether you've been a nervous person, whether you've been a sickly person, whether you've never been able to attract abundance and prosperity and money into your life or love into your life, it doesn't make any difference. If you begin to shift away from all of the excuse patterns, which tell you why you can't do things, and shift to something called awareness, awareness is that state of mind in which you think like this. You say to yourself, whenever any problem or any difficulty or anything about your life that you would like to change comes up, and you immediately start telling yourself all the reasons why you can't do it, which are excuses. Instead, you begin to shift to these simple words right out of the New Testament. Well, with God, all things are possible. That is, when I realign myself with Spirit, and when I get to the place from which all things originate, to which all things return, when I get to that specific place in my life and want to change something about myself, my first response isn't to go to that excuse or to that long-established habitual pattern of why that continues to dominate in your life and becomes the way that you live. Instead, your first thought is, with God, all things are possible. And, of course, that leaves nothing out. That means miracles can happen for you. That means whatever it is you place your attention on can come to you and so on. With God, all things are possible. Now, the second, and that's just awareness, and I'm just doing this very briefly. So then the second thing I want you to think about as I go into this paradigm is this concept of contemplation. Now, in the book, I have seven of these concepts, but these two are really important for what I'm going to be doing here today. So first you think with awareness. And most of us are not trained to think with awareness. We're trained to think from our ego. And our ego is focused on why we can't do things and so on. So the second thing is contemplation, and to understand that when you are using excuses in your life for continuing to stay in the habitual pattern that you have, and to use the memes that have been handed to you as mind viruses, and to the belief systems you have about your inability to change because of your genetics and so on, that you have to understand that when you are using those excuses, you are giving evidence that you have been contemplating what you can't have, or what is not possible, or what is missing, or what will never show up for you. When you think in these kinds of terms, excuses are evidence that you have been contemplated, because we get what we think about, whether we want it or not. So when from Erroneous Zone's three-part paradigm to helping people to use common sense to overcome self-defeating behavior patterns, which became, you know, the signature book in my life way back in my early 30s, to now listening to this great teacher, Lao Tzu, having a painting of his that was sent to me by somebody on my radio show on HayHouseRadio.com, and listening, I did not write this paradigm. This paradigm, I didn't even know what was going to be in it. I just, even when I wrote the entire book, I didn't know what the last third of the book was going to be, except that there was a specific thing, and I was going to let it come to me. And I started out to teach and write about this paradigm from the same perspective that I'm saying to you here right now, that I thought with awareness. That is, if I just stay aligned, because I say over and over again, every excuse is a misalignment. It's an evidence that you've been contemplating what you can't do, why you can't have it, why it's missing from your life, why other people have it and you don't. When you think like that, you are misaligned. And what we want to do in this paradigm, and I knew this, was to shift into a new way of aligning ourselves. So now I moved into this, and I began to have this paradigm. It was literally dictated to me. I'm looking at it right now as I sit here in my office here on Maui. I'm looking at that picture of Lao Tzu as I speak to all of you, all from all over the world. And it's almost as if he's speaking to me right now and saying, okay, tell them what it is that I told you as you were writing this book. Because this was the most magical piece of writing that I've ever had in my life. And I knew that something very profound was happening while I was doing it. I've been a practitioner of whenever it is that I write something that I really want to tell other people about and I get very excited about, I go to work on it myself. And one of the things that I did as I dictated this, as this paradigm became dictated to me, is I looked at my own body as I saw it on public television, and I realized that I had been carrying around about 20, 22 pounds around my waist. I'm 6'2", so I could get away with that. I wasn't so particularly fat, but I certainly had excess weight around my middle, that I had used an enormous number of excuses to maintain. And I've been doing this for about 10 years now without even realizing it. Just sort of snuck up on me, and I would say things like, "Oh, this is man weight." And it's the kind of things that happens as you get older, and you get thicker when you get older, and it's not easy to, you can't maintain a trim body type and so on as you get older. It's just a part of the aging process, and these are man boobs, and this is what happens, and all of these kinds of things that I would say to myself. And I decided to, before I went out there and talked any more about it after seeing myself on the public television special, that I was going to change that, and I was going to apply this paradigm. So that's by way of sort of letting you know where this is coming from. I use a quotation in the book from H. Jackson Brown Jr. It says, "Never underestimate your power to change yourself, and never overestimate your power to change others." The likelihood of you being able to change other people once they're past 4 or 5 years of age is almost zero. People change after that because of the choices that they make, even though you think you might be making those changes for them. But I don't want you to ever underestimate your power to change yourself. It doesn't matter, and you got to say this to yourself over and over again now as you go through the rest of this seminar today. You've got to be able to say to yourself, it doesn't make any difference how deeply entrenched it is, how long I've had it, where it came from, how it has dominated my life, what it's been like for me. It doesn't make, none of that makes any difference whatsoever. The fact is that I'm not going to underestimate my power to change myself. I can be all that I put my attention on. And I'm talking about looking at the way your body looks and so on. And there's things to do. And one of the things, like I wanted to weigh 190 pounds. And I wrote that on, I have a picture of a globe on my refrigerator here on Maui. And I didn't tell anybody else what it was. I just wrote 190 in four different parts, corners of this picture that's on my refrigerator. And I would look at that every single day and say to myself, now I weighed about 213 pounds. So that's 23 pounds. But I just constantly said to myself, I will not underestimate my power to be able to get myself to weigh 190 pounds within a specific period of time, which was a couple of months. And I'm not going to go into all the things that I did, but many of you know that, because I've talked about this before on my radio show and so on, is that I just decided that I wasn't going to consume sugar. I have a good friend named Jorge Cruz who's coming out with a book with Hay House called The Belly Fat Cure. And I just saw the preview of it, but I had an interview with him and he talked to me about the amount of sugar that we consume. And I made that decision. And then I began to work the paradigm. And the paradigm works like this. There are seven questions that I had dictated to me in my writing space, and I'm actually sitting right here in the very space where these came to me here on Maui, on Kaanapali Beach, where we have a seminar in October. I think it begins the 23rd, where we do an entire weekend, a Friday night, all day Saturday, and all day Sunday, and my friend Ram Dass is there, and I invite any of you who would like to come and be here on Kaanapali Beach and experience an entire weekend of looking at this. But we don't have an entire weekend here today. We have about 90 minutes or so. So the questions are, if you have the book, you know what they are. But I want to do more than just talk about the questions. I want to have you really examine, especially the first question. It's the most important of all the questions. The statement at the beginning of Excuses Be Gone, what we call the display quote, says, don't believe everything you think. There's an estimate for people who do these kind of things that we have 60,000 separate thoughts every day. 60,000 separate thoughts every day. The only problem is that we have the same 60,000 thoughts today that we had yesterday, and we're going to have the same 60,000 thoughts again tomorrow, and we constantly are repeating these thoughts. And if you were to really look at the question of is the question true? Is what you are saying to yourself true? You begin to find out that of all of those 60,000 separate thoughts that you have every day, you can't be certain that any one of them is 100% true all the time. So what you do is you ask yourself the question, is it true? Is it true? And let's look at what a typical excuse pattern would be for... I can't afford it, for example. That's one of the 18 excuses that are evidence that when a person says, I can't afford it, it means that they have been carrying around a thought system that says that I don't have enough money and I'm not going to be able to afford to do something in the future. And the question you ask yourself, first of all, is this true? Second question that is asked, excuse that is used over and over again in this first question of the paradigm is... you will say things like it's going to be difficult for me to change. Like if you're addicted to something, whatever it might be, whether it's a substance, whether it's a way of thinking, whether it's a person, whether it's a business, whatever it might be, if you're addicted to something, most people, when you look at the addiction philosophies and how to get people over their addictions, most people will say it's difficult to change. Now, immediately, when you find yourself saying something like this, go back to what I spoke about with awareness and go back to what I spoke about earlier about contemplation. If you tell yourself that it is going to be difficult to change, and this is such a meme because You hear people saying it all the time. It's not easy to do that, or that's going to take a long time, or that's going to be very difficult. And these memes are just mind viruses that were planted in you that say to you that if you want to change something, you have to work hard, you have to set goals, you have to struggle. It has to be, all of these kinds of statements that we use. As we use them enough times, they become enculturated within us to a place where we just automatically assume that it's not going to be easy, that you can't afford it, that that it's going to take a long time. That you're too old, that you're any number of these kind of excuses. So the first question to ask yourself is it true that I can't afford it? Is it true that it's going to take a long time? Is it true that it's going to be difficult for me to change? And so you answer the question, is it true, by saying a second question, which is, can I be 100% certain that what I am thinking is true? So you work this paradigm this way. Can I be 100% certain that this is true? And the fact is that you can never be 100% certain of anything. So now you have a choice. You can think a thought that says it's going to be difficult, it's going to take a long time. You can't be 100% certain that that's true, because the possibility that instead of it being going to take a long time, it's going to take a short time. Is always there. So you start to look at this system that you have created in your mind about thinking thoughts when you want to change something, and realize that as you say it's going to take a long time, it's going to be difficult, I can't afford it, I'm not strong enough, whatever it is, that you can't be 100% certain of it, but you know that if you think that thought, it is going to lead you to a place where you're not going to be able to get what you want. So if you want to lose the weight, if you want to quit the smoking and so on, and you've got yourself convinced that it's going to take a long time and it's going to be difficult and you can't afford it or whatever, and you begin to look at that question and say, is it true? Is it true? Can I be 100% certain that it's true? The answer is no, but if I think that thought, if I continue to think that thought, that excuse pattern, then what's going to happen is I'm going to guarantee that I'm not going to get to the place where I want to be. I'm not going to overcome my shyness. I'm not going to overcome my addiction patterns. I'm not going to get off of the drugs that I've been using. I'm not going to lose the weight, because you've already set up a failure mechanism in place in your mind and convinced yourself that it's true. And the reason that you convince yourself that it's true is because you've been carrying that idea around with you since you were a little boy or a little girl, and your parents have told you that, and their parents told you that. And so now what do I do with is it true? The next part of that is you say to yourself, if I can't be 100% certain that it's true, what's the reverse of that thought? That is, what's the reverse of I can't afford it? The reverse of that thought is I can afford it. The money is going to be there. Now, go right back again. Can you be 100% certain that this reversal now that you have made is true? Can you be certain that the money is going to show up? Can you be certain that instead of it going to be difficult, that it's going to be easy? Can you be certain that instead of it taking a long time, it's going to happen overnight? Can you be absolutely certain of that? The answer to that is no, just like the answer to the first part of the question is no. You can't be certain of any one thing, because your mind can't be predictive of what's going to take place. So now you have a choice. And the choice that you have in this first part of the paradigm is, should I think a thought that is guaranteed, if I think it, going to lead me to the place where I don't want to be and continue to stay in the pattern that I've been in my lifetime? Or if I reverse the thought and say, instead of using the excuse, I use the opposite of it, that is, it's going to be easy, it's going to happen overnight, and so on. If I think that thought, then at least I set myself up for the opportunity for it to take place. Now you can at least have within you the rationale that you're looking for, that will start to align you with the energy of the universe, which I didn't even understand when I was writing your erroneous zones, the idea of the energy of the universe and that an aligning with the creative source. This that came much, much later in my life. I wouldn't even put words like that into my books at that time because I just wasn't, that's not where I was. I'm very much there now. I'm very much knowing, very specifically knowing that if I put my thought on what it is that I would like to attract into my life, and I use a rationale that says it's not only going to happen, but it's on its way. In fact, it's not only on its way, it's already here. And so I begin to think in these kinds of terms that what it is that I would like to be able to have. So to overcome my 23 pounds or so around my waist, to overcome many addictions, you're listening to an addictive personality here. I've overcome many, many addictions in my life, alcohol being one. It's been 22 years since I put alcohol into my body. Tobacco was another one of them. Recreational drugs were part of the addictive nature that I've had in my life. Caffeine at one time in my life, and not coffee, but soft drinks and so on. I lived and consumed them on a regular basis. So now, and I don't do any of those things any longer. And I did it. I began to make the changes by taking this first question in the paradigm. Not only would I say to myself, I would never say it's going to be difficult for me to change. I would never say, no one has ever heard me say I can't afford to do something. And I will never allow any of my patients when I had a practice to use this kind of a rationale, to use this kind of an explanation for continuing to stay in habituated patterns that don't work for you, that are self-defeating. Because I'm coming from a place here that not only is it possible for you to make dramatic changes in your life, but I'm also coming from the place that it is, not only is it easy to do, but it can be done almost instantaneously. That once you begin to reprogram your subconscious mind, and once you begin to work this paradigm and begin to say to yourself, what it is that I intend to change about myself is going to happen. The right people are going to show up. I affirm that there is nothing that can't be done, because with God all things are possible. I think and contemplate only what it is that I would like to attract. As Thomas Troward said, the law of flotation was not discovered by the contemplation of the sinking of things. It was discovered by the contemplation of the floating of things. And that's true of virtually everything. So I didn't contemplate when I wanted to take these 23 pounds off around my waist that I was going to continue to have this weight there, two or three months from now. I began to say to myself, with awareness, with God, all things are possible. This is something that I definitely can do. It's not going to be difficult. It's going to be easy. I do not have to put sugar into my body, even though it's everywhere. Whatever help I need is going to be there. And why not make this like a new way of processing things in your life? Why not begin to say to yourself that I can accomplish anything? It's going to be heaven. Whatever help I need is on its way. I am a piece of God, and I must be like what I came from. And what I came from is a place of unlimited abundance, and so on. And so you get yourself into a place where this you're starting to reprogram not only your conscious mind, that is the part of you that's doing the active things that you do every day, but the unconscious part of yourself as well, the part of you that is dictated by these memes and these beliefs about your genetics and so on, that are really self-sabotaging in many ways. So the very first question of the paradigm is the one I intend to spend the most time on, the question of, is it true? If I can't be 100% certain that it's true, then what I want to do is find the reverse of whatever thought that I've been using, which constitutes an excuse, and make that my affirmation. So I'm going to affirm, and I have on page 232 of the book different ways of thinking. Like, instead of it will be difficult, you shift that to, with God all things are possible. Instead of it's going to be risky, you shift to, I cannot fail when I trust in the wisdom that created me. Instead of it will take a long time, your affirmation is there's only now. I live fully in the present moment. Instead of I can't afford it, you say, if I stay in God realization, all that I need will be provided. Now, why not say that? Now, you might say, well, it's never been provided before. I lived all of that. And the reason that it's never been provided before is because you've never thought that way. And if you don't think that way, then you don't align yourself with an energy system that allows you to do that. And I'm telling you, you're listening to the richest kid in the orphanage. I've said it many, many times, you know, growing up in a series of foster homes and orphanages. But I was the one that always knew that I could attract funds into my life and the financing in my life. Now, the second part of this paradigm is... The second question, what you've done is you've used awareness and you use contemplation, and you everything that you have used as an explanation for why it can't work or why it won't work or why it's never happened before, you have now shifted to the opposite of that thought. You just now go to the opposite of that thought, and it doesn't make any difference what anybody else around you says, what your family member says, what society says, what it says in the newspapers, what it says, you know, in this recession that we're having, and all of these kind of things. You don't allow those kind of thoughts in. You allow them in, but you always have the reverse of them. Instead of this recession is going to be something that's going to keep me from making money, your inner voice says, I can't be 100% certain that that thought is true, so I'm going to take a different one that also I can't be 100% certain that isn't true, and that is there are opportunities in recessions, and I'm going to that opportunity is going to surface for me. And you just constantly say that. You constantly remind yourself of that. And then the second part of this, which I talked about earlier, is where do these excuses come from? Now, where these excuses come from is very fascinating. I mean, we could do 2 hours on just that. In fact, I used to write about this kind of thing, particularly in The Sky's the Limit, many, many years ago. Where do the behaviors come from? Like, who's responsible for me? Now, most people want to blame their mother. And as I said on the PBS special, like when I would have a patient that would ever blame somebody else, they would say, well, it's my mother's fault that I'm this way or that way or I can't do this. I would say, so your mother's the one who is responsible for you being overweight or not being able to be assertive or, you know, always be victimized by men or whatever. And the woman, I remember saying yes. And I said, well, then I want you to leave the office. And she said, what are you talking about? I said, I want you to leave the office and I want to go get your mother. And I want you to bring her back. And she said, for what? I said, well, because I'm going to treat her, and you're going to get better. And she laughed and realized how silly it was for her to be saying that somebody else is responsible. Because if somebody else is responsible for you being the way that you are, then you have to wait for them to change in order for you to get better. And those people are not going to change. Here are the facts. I mean, I could go through all of this and spend a lot of time on it. I'm becoming conscious of the time because we're going to work with some people here in the second half of this. The answer to where did it come from is it came from myself. That is, you have to, if you want to live an excuses be gone life, you must be willing to say to yourself, I am taking total responsibility for everything that I think and every habitual pattern that I have. I take total responsibility for it. You eliminate blame, and you say, but then people will often say, yes, but, you know, I was only 3 years old and I couldn't make that choice. And I will say to them, but you remember being 3 years old and being very frightened because somebody yelled, you know, but did you know any 3 year olds that would just ignore that yelling? And they'd think hard and think hard. They say, yeah, well, my sister didn't, or when I was in school, I remember, you know, I would get all upset, but the other ones didn't. And I used to blame, you know, the school system or whatever it is for why I am the way I am. I'd say, so there were some people who weren't choosing to act that way. And you chose, even though you didn't know how to make a different kind of a choice, unless you're willing to take responsibility for it. Now, I'm sitting here talking to you at the age of 69, and I've just been diagnosed with chronic lymphocytic leukemia. And everything I found out about it and I read about it tells me that it's incurable. That's what all of the literature out there says. But I didn't even ask the question once when I talked to the hematologist, oncologist, and so on. And I didn't ask them once, how did I get this? Because if I am going to deal with this, and if I am going to work my way through it, and if I'm going to make my body work at a level where it is not going to become immobilized or even deficient in any way because of this leukemia, then I have to take responsibility for it. I live in a carcinogenic world. I have eaten in certain kinds of ways. I have behaved in certain kinds of ways in my life. I have abused my body at different times in my life. I got older. You know, that's one of the things that the doctor said. He said, well, he said, you got older, and that's what happens. It's much more common in men over the age of 60 and so on. So it's like I take total responsibility for all of that, and I'm asking you, if you're overweight, if you're poor, if you're whatever, to say these are the choices that I have made, okay? And I could go much more, excuse me, much more into depth on this, but all I'm asking you to do is recognize that if you've got excuse patterns and self-defeating behaviors, the subtitle of Excuses Be Gone is How to Change Lifelong Self-Defeating Thinking Habits. If you've got lifelong thinking habits, that, and you must have, if you've been overweight since you were a little boy or a little girl, that comes from a thinking habit. If you've been poor for your entire lifetime, that comes from a thinking pattern. If you've been overlooked in relationships and so on, and you've been doing that for an entire lifetime, that comes from thinking patterns that you have established in your life. And if you can shift those back to, is it true, the way I just went through it with you, and take the reverse of that and begin to say, I can change this and I can do it easily, and it's going to happen for me, and it's going to happen for me rather quickly. Because I just don't believe that you have to wait a long time in order to make these things happen. I think you can begin this process. And by the way, the 23 pounds that I took off around my waist, I took it off in just under a month. I think it was 29 or 30 days. And I didn't even really try. I just absolutely used what I'm speaking about here with you. So that's the second part of the paradigm. The third part is, what's the payoff? And the interesting thing about the payoff is, and again, this is chapter 14 in the book, the payoff is for virtually all self-defeating patterns. It's really quite simple. I've listed a bunch of them. One of them is called avoidance. We get a payoff for keeping ourselves in a self-defeating way by avoiding what is involved, by avoiding the risks that are involved in making these kinds of changes. So payoffs or psychological payoff systems are really just avoidance mechanisms that we have established. We feel safer. It's basically the easy way out. It's a way of manipulating other people. If I use an excuse, I'm too tired, as I put here in the book, I'm too tired, translates to have someone else do the chore. The payoff, I get to sleep while another person takes over my responsibilities. I can't afford it, or I spent all my money, translates to you buy me what I want. The payoff, I've manipulated you, and so on. So manipulation, being right, protection, blame. It doesn't take long to realize that these payoff systems that we have, they don't work for us. They're not psychological payoff systems that are valuable for us. They don't improve the quality of our life, but they are the things that we get out of continuing to behave in these kinds of ways. And so once you just reckon, you don't even have to think about what the payoff is. Like, if you've been overweight since you were 20 years old and you're 40 years old now, and you begin to recognize that, what has been my payoff? It's been an easier route. I can blame other people. It's a way of my avoiding being aligned with the well-being from which I came. You get that and you say, okay, so that's enough of that. You don't have to do a lot of deep psychological work. But the fourth part of the paradigm, which is the only four parts that I want to cover here at the beginning, because the rest of it is a philosophy. The fourth part of this paradigm is maybe the most important question after, is it true, and can you be 100% certain that it's true, is what would my life look like if I couldn't make these excuses? Like, what? Let's just say I couldn't say the kinds of things that I say that keep me stuck in that place. And this is where Lao Tzu, when I was writing this paradigm and having it dictated to me, was the most helpful to me. It was ask them what would their life look like if they couldn't make it. Play a game, I kept hearing. Play a game. And the game is just imagine that you can't use the excuse that you've been using. It's going to be difficult. It's going to take a long time. I can't afford it. I'm too old. I'm too tired. I'm too any number of things. I do it with myself all the time, especially now being at the age of 69, where people, you know, my kids start calling me old man and things. You know, it's like I ask myself the question, you know, if I'm thinking, well, I'm too old for this or I can't do that or whatever, like, what if I couldn't come up with that excuse? What if that one just wasn't available to me? Just like it's called Let's Pretend. And so if you couldn't say the excuse that you use almost on a universal basis of to keep you stuck in the pattern that you've been in, if you just couldn't do that, if you could just have an imaginary flight, if you will, what would happen is that you would come up with a different way of being. And generally the answer to that is I feel free. I feel free. How would you feel? How would you feel? What would your life look like? How would you feel? How would you be thinking if you couldn't use the excuse that you've been using, which keeps you stuck in that habituated way of behaving and living? What if you couldn't use that any longer? And then what would you have to substitute? If you couldn't use the excuse, you'd have to have some kind of a thought in there. And the thought that you would have in there is that I can weigh what I want to weigh. I can look the way I want to look. I can have the amount of money that I want to have in my life. What if you couldn't think the thought, I can't afford it? And it doesn't mean that you just go out and spend somebody else's money or you steal or whatever it is. It means that your thought system now shifts off of what can't be done, because earlier in this seminar I was speaking about the importance of contemplation. The presence of excuses in your life gives evidence that you have been contemplating what you can't have, what you don't want, what's always missing, what somebody else has got and you don't have, and so on. That's the evidence that you have, because whatever your life is, whatever is showing up there, is evidence of what you've been contemplating. We get what we think about, whether we want it or not. So if you can get that fourth question, what would my life look like if I couldn't say it's going to be difficult? You'd say to yourself, it will be easy. I've given this example before. I was at the mall in Los Angeles not too long ago, and this young man walked up to me, and he was a chronic stutterer. He had a speech impediment, and he could barely get words out, but he recognized me, and he came up to me, and he started talking to me about overcoming this. He just thought that I would be the, since I'd written this book and so on, that I'd be the person that could help him, because he'd been stuttering his entire life. And so I started working him through the paradigm and I'll shift into that in just a moment. But I asked him to just say to me, what would your life look like if you couldn't think the thought that this is something that I can't change? What if you couldn't think that thought? How would you feel? How would you feel? And he began to say things like, I said, no, get it in your imagination, because you see, here's where this fourth question is really crucial. And I just want to take a few minutes on this, and then we're going to open up the phones. The greatest gift that every single one of you out there listening right now have been given is the gift of your imagination. Your imagination is where everything is created. All that is created, all that we experience in life was once imagined. And this imagination of yours is so powerful that it is really the source of everything that is physical in the world. So in, and I would say to Vincent, in your imagination, I want you to imagine yourself as free of this speech impediment. Just imagine that. Can you do that? And he said, yes, I can do that. And then I said to him, and how does that feel in your body? And this is really important for you. You know, how does it feel when you've imagined yourself as being able to have whatever it is that you want for yourself in your life? How does it feel? Because you have to assume the feeling of this wish being fulfilled. You have to assume the feeling. And this is so powerful. I do this virtually every day. Whatever the wish is that I have in my life, I assume the feeling in my body of that wish being fulfilled. And as I do that, I ask, what does it feel like? And I said to Vincent, I said, what does it feel like right now? Instead of the excuse that you've been using that you can't do this, that you know this is a genetic thing and you can't help yourself and so on, what does it feel like? And he said, it feels great. It feels really great. I said, okay, so now what I want you to do is every single time that that thought comes up about your speech impediment, and I'm saying it to all of you, the people that are listening here today, the same thing. Every single time that the thought, that the idea of what it is that you would like to change about yourself, particularly with addictions, this works really beautifully. And you're listening to an addict, okay? So I'm telling you, this is how I overcame addictions. It's you see yourself as an addiction-free person, free of the addiction to sugar, which is what I was addicted to there, free of your addictions to coffee, to any kind of alcohol, to drugs, and so on. And by the way, I mean, people who are severe alcoholics, if they work this paradigm, if they work at, really with the kind of integrity that I'm speaking about working at here and the discipline, alcoholism can become a thing of the past in less than an hour. Now, I know people will say over and over again, but wait a minute, I'm treating alcoholics and it takes a long time, but that's part of those memes that we're trying to get rid of, the idea that this is a difficult, long-established process. The fact is that if you're not drinking right now in this 1 hour that you are talking, and you've been drinking all up until right this moment, in this hour, you are not an alcoholic. You are not drinking right now. And if you're not drinking right now, you've proven that you can do this, and you can be here. You can be here in this moment. So that when you get to this, assuming the feeling of the wish fulfilled, what you're doing is you're feeling in your body by going to your imagination. Then as you feel it in your body, what you want to do is ask yourself, whenever this subject comes up, the subject of that I would like to change about myself, whenever it comes up, what kind of reinforcement am I going to use? I say there are two. There's the subjective and the objective. Now the objective is the subject. I told Vincent, the subject of your speech impediment comes up, and your thought now goes to, oh my God, I've been doing this for my whole lifetime. Oh, it's impossible for me to change this. I've tried before. Other people have told me that you can't do this. I mean, look at all the research, look at all the studies. And that's all objective kind of information that comes to you that you use when you're trying to overcome this, this difficulty, this lifelong thinking habit in this fourth part of the paradigm. So what you do now is you shift to subjective. And the subjective thing that you do is you go to the assumption of the feeling of the wish fulfilled. You go to feeling great. You felt great when you imagined it. You go to that no matter what it is. If you hear research about it, if you hear other people talking about it, if you start to talk, instantly your thought goes to the feeling of feeling great. And then, of course, what I've talked about on my radio show many times is that you take the last 5 minutes of your day. And the last 5 minutes of your day, you're in your bed. And in your bed, you're going to sleep. And before you go off to sleep, just as you enter into your subconscious mind, the subconscious mind is the part of us that really dictates most of these habituated patterns. And the subconscious mind cannot make a distinction. This is really important. It cannot make a distinction between what it is that you are feeling as a result of your imagination or what it is that you are feeling as a result of your life experiences. So now, the last 5 minutes before you enter in for the next 8 hours of your subconscious mind, you do not want to be reviewing all the things that happened during the day that remind you of how unfortunate your life is and how unhappy you are and what's missing and what, you know, and all of the negativity in your life. Because now your subconscious mind will say, well, this is what you're feeling. And if this is what you're feeling, we'll give you 8 hours to marinate in that. And then when you wake up tomorrow, we will offer you opportunities, you know, experiences rather, that match up to what it is that you have been feeling. Whereas if the reverse is true, if as you go off to sleep, you visualize yourself as feeling great because you're using subjective attention, you're always only using your own imaginative idea of what it is that you want to be, you are going to program your subconscious mind for the next 8 hours into feeling great about your health, about your love life, about your business, about your weight, about your addictions, whatever it is. You're going to feel great about it because that's the gift of your imagination. And then as you wake up the next day, now your subconscious mind has marinated for 8 hours on feeling great about overcoming whatever it is that you want to overcome, these excuses. And you start now getting into the next part of the paradigm, which is, can I create a rational reason to change? And that's the fifth part of this paradigm. And the next part, which is, can I access universal cooperation in shedding these old habits? Can I access universal cooperation and can I create a rational reason to change? What you're doing here is you are going to access universal cooperation. You're going to access God qualities. You're going to go back to what I opened with. You contemplate what it is that you intend to manifest, and you think with awareness. And awareness says, with God, all things are possible. So now you've immediately gone to, with God, all things are possible, about overcoming your addictions or whatever it is you're overcoming. And you are now beginning to align yourself, because the only way that you can access universal cooperation, that is the help of God, the help of source energy that you are connected to, you are a piece of this, the only way that you can access this is by being like it. When you contemplate in the same way that source contemplates, when you contemplate in the same way that God contemplates, then you gain the power, the same powers that God has, or the same powers that the Spirit has, the same power that allows everything to manifest into this world that has already been created. So this is not really about learning to create as much as it is to, the creation is complete. It's learning to get to a place where what it is that you are manifesting, you're going to manifest a certain part of what is already created. You can only manifest that part of that what you would like to have that is created by being like that which allows things to create. And that means you think with awareness, okay? So you access divine cooperation by continuously staying in a state of well-being, in a state of consciousness, in a state of higher awareness, and so on. And then you move into the final part of the paradigm, which is, how do I continuously reinforce this new way of thinking? And this I've talked about in the, you know, in the book in great depth. You start having things like internal knowings. You start hanging around different kinds of people. You start being in different kinds of environments. You start doing things like yoga. You start doing meditation. You change around, because when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at begin to change. You begin to change your lifestyle. So now we go back and review. I would like to change something about myself that I've had for a long time. Is it true that I can't do that, or it's going to be difficult, or it's going to take a long time, or I can't afford it, or I'm too old? Is it true? Can I be 100% certain that it is true? No. So now I'm going to pick the reverse of that, because I can't be 100% certain of either one of them, but the one that I want to pick is the one that at least is going to give me an opportunity to get to where I want to be. And then, very quickly, you go through this paradigm with you. Not quickly, necessarily, but you can do this all, and you do this on a daily basis, 3 or 4 or 5 times, and within a week or so, you have really changed your behavior. You've changed your life. Where did these excuses come from? This is stuff that I chose since I was a little kid, and I bought into those memes. Some people did, and some people didn't. What's my payoff? I get to practice avoidance. I get to stay safe. I get to manipulate other people and so on. What would my life look like? What would my life look like if I couldn't think those thoughts? My goodness, I'd be free. I would absolutely be free. And Vincent's stuttering problem, by the way, I've been in touch with him, is diminished dramatically. Can I create a rational reason to change? Yes. Can I access universal cooperation in getting rid of these old habits? My God, you're going to find out that as you do these things, everything is easier and easier and easier. Here it is now, 6 months later for me with this weight around my middle, and it's the easiest thing in the world. I've just developed into a habit of not eating sugar. Instead of drinking milk, which has 11 grams of sugar in an 8-ounce glass of skim milk, I drink Almond Breeze unsweetened. It has less than 1 gram. It tastes exactly the same, but I don't put sugar into it. It's just a new habit. My refrigerator doesn't have those kinds of things in it any longer because I've accessed universal cooperation, and it always shows up, and it's always there. Okay, Diane, we can probably open the phones. I know I went a little bit over, but I really wanted to get through it in this way.
No, it's such valuable information, and we've got the phone lines open right now if you're interested in having Dr. Dyer work with you on the excuses be gone paradigm. It's just such powerful information. And we can take a break for a few minutes, give you a chance to maybe go drink a water or something. We'll come back, and I'll give you the phone numbers again. It should be on your player window as well. 866-917-7507. Also internationally, dial your country code 760-918-4347 to participate today in the Excuses Be Gone online seminar. And we'll be right back in just a moment.
Please stay tuned. Dr. Dyer will return with more in a few minutes. We now return to Putting the Excuses Be Gone paradigm into action. Please welcome back Dr. Wayne Dyer.
Thanks for joining us today, and welcome back to the online seminar today with Dr. Wayne Dyer, Putting the Excuses Be Gone paradigm to work in your life. And I'm Diane Ray. We've been taking calls from people through the break, and I wish we could get to everybody who's called in, but unfortunately we'll only be able to maybe get to a few people today, and Dr. Dyer will be taking them through the paradigm so you can really see how powerful this is and really see how it works. So the first person we're going to bring on the show today is Brian, and he's calling from Toronto, and you're on with Dr. Dyer.
Hi.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I've been a big fan for many years.
Good.
I think I've got all your books, and most of them on Audible, and many of them in hardback. And
That's terrific.
I'm sitting here waiting on the radio, listening to you talk, and it seems so simple. And
about
I understand
what?
It, and I preach it to other people and friends, and and I think I'm a better teacher than a listener myself. I've been I was abused as a child physically, and I guess I continue to abuse myself as an adult. I'm just about 50, and I smoke and I drink too much. But I listen to everything, and it makes sense. I just have a hard time putting it into practice. I guess I'm looking for a payback.
Would you like to be a non-smoker?
I would love to be a non-smoker. I'm feeling it. I don't know. My doctor told me that I had COPD probably about 8-9 months ago. And
so that's life-threatening, right?
Yeah, I know that.
Yeah, okay. And the reason that you are not a non-smoker is because?
Because it's easy to smoke, and I get relaxation out of it. And I drink. I think I can control it, but I come home at night, and I and I can't. I have 12 hours.
When was the last time you went a day without a drink?
Probably 2004.
Okay, so 5 years or 6 years. So you're an alcoholic. Are you able to say that?
I am. I don't drink at night, or rather, through the night. I don't drink during the day. I have no interest in it. When I get home in the evening, from about 7 to 9, I feel like it's a reward. I've worked my ass off for 8, 9, 10 hours, and I work very hard, and it's like a reward. The first drink stimulates me, gets me thinking, gets me stimulated, and the second drink numbs me.
So, do you think it would be difficult for you to change these two habits? Be truthful. You got to be truthful with me.
Yeah, I'm being truthful. I think it would be very. I've tried.
It would be very.
I went 14 months without a drink. I went to checked myself into a place and went 14 months, and it was the best 14 months of my wife's life, and she loved it, and she's so supportive, and we have a lovely marriage, and all of that is great. But I just
So
very difficult.
Let's stay with it. So. So the first question that I asked then before, and I'm doing this quickly. I mean, normally I would take more time with this, but can you be 100% certain or 100% certain that it would be difficult for you to quit smoking and to quit drinking? Can you be 100% certain that it would be?
No.
Because
I think I'm strong enough to do it.
Okay, and there is the
possibility yet, but I think I can.
Yeah, you already have evidence of that. How long since you have gone a day without a cigarette?
Probably 2 years.
2 years. So you got two major addictions going, and both of which you know that on the other side of it is health and happiness and a happier marriage and so on.
Yes.
So the second question then is, so if you can't be 100% certain that it's going to be difficult for you to change this, because this is the one, by the way, that most people use to keep themselves from doing these things. They don't, you know, when they get confronted with difficult or easy things, they always pick the easy things. What's the reverse of it's going to be difficult for me to change? What's the reverse of that?
The reverse.
Yeah, what's the reverse? What's the reverse? What's an opposite thought of it's going to be difficult for me to change these two habits?
It's going to be easy.
Okay. So can you make that statement? Can you say that statement?
I can say that. I've said it many times.
Okay, so say it.
It's going to be easy to...
For me
to stop. Mm-hmm.
These self-defeating behaviors.
Self-defeating habits.
Okay. So now, can you be 100% certain that that's true?
No.
You can't be, can you? So now you've got two thoughts. One is the opposite of the other. And neither one of them, you can be 100% certain that they are going to, that they're either going to be difficult or not, that they're true. So now take a real hard look at why you would continue to use the first option, which is almost a guarantee that you will never overcome this, you know, because why would you choose to do such difficult things when such easy things like having a cigarette are available to you? Okay.
Right.
So now we look at this, can you just declare an affirmation that instead of it's going to be difficult for me to change this, can you just declare it as an affirmation that it's going to be easy? Can you just declare that?
I declare that it's going to be easy.
Okay. So, and then you access universal cooperation by saying to yourself what I talked about at the beginning of this seminar, with God, what?
Oh. With God, all things are possible.
Are possible. So now that's called thinking with awareness. So now you've got an opportunity to do this And there's nothing to stop you from doing that other than you're wanting to retreat back to your old habit. And this first question, sometimes in a seminar, I'll spend like 2 hours with a person until they really are able to say, and this is particularly true with people who can't afford things, you know, with it, because everyone has had the experience of not having money and then having it show up unexpectedly. So I want you to just see if you can commit to saying, even if you're not committed to doing it, I just want you to be committed to being willing to say, from now on, at least, you know, in the, because you wouldn't have signed on for the seminar and stayed home and done all of the things that you're doing here.
No, I want to change it.
Yeah, so you do want to change it. I mean, this isn't just to make my seminar look good. This is something you really want to do. So can you commit to me to saying that it's going to be easy? It's not going to be difficult for me to change. And with God, all things are possible.
It's going to be easy. It's not going to be difficult. And with God, all things are possible.
Okay. So now this thought, even though you can't be 100% certain that it's true, is the only chance you have for eliminating this lifetime thinking habit, or this adult lifetime thinking habit that you have, that results in you putting poisons into your body and destroying your life force. It's the only chance that you have. No matter, even if you light up a cigarette as soon as this is over, and you take one puff instead of three that you normally would take, and you put it out and you say, it's going to be easy for me to change, and with God, all things are possible. Because now what you want to do, Brian, is it Brian? No.
Yeah, it's
what's
Brian.
Brian, what you want to do is we want to shift down to the fifth question or the sixth question is, how can I access universal cooperation in shedding this old habit? So I'm going to march ahead to this. Normally I wouldn't do that, but you know, we've only got 10 or 15 minutes left on the seminar.
Yep.
And I want to stay with you because this is one of the ones that people really believe to be one of the more difficult ones. And we are a nation, you know, I include Canada in that, we are a nation of addicts, aren't we? I mean, it's like in every commercial that we watch is about another pill that we should be taking for something else, you know, so that we get more dependent upon things outside of ourselves rather than our own inner abilities to. You want to access universal cooperation here. And the only way that you can access cooperation is to recognize where you came from. And where you came from is well-being. You didn't come into this world addicted to anything. You came into this world with perfect lungs and with a bloodstream and all of that. You came from a place of well-being. That's what creation is. It's about well-being. It brought you, you know, you came from non-form to form, you know. I mean, from form, rather, to non-form, from from non-being into being. And so in order for you to access God cooperation, you've got to start thinking like God thinks. You've got to start contemplating, like, and it's like almost like you've got to get outside of yourself and ask yourself the question, when it comes to this addiction, I mean, is it possible for the source of all being to be in an addictive state?
No.
Is it? It's not, is it?
No.
Because it's well-being that we come from. It's love that we come from. It's health that we come from. It's kindness that we come from. You know, that non-being doesn't have any of this other stuff in it. You know, all of this other stuff that we call disease and the stuff that we call addictions and so on is from, you know, being in a place of being. Non-being, which...
I'm going to get to
the payback in just a second. But I want you to start think. You've made an affirmation. And you've taken two thoughts, one of which you can't be certain of, the other, and neither one of them can you be 100% certain of, but you've decided to choose the one that at least if you think this one, keep thinking this one, even if you don't act on it, if you just keep thinking that one, that I'm going to access divine cooperation, with God all things are possible, and, you know, this thing is going to be easy and it's not going to take a long time, you realize then you have to act on what you think about. So you're just going to keep this as a continuous mantra for yourself. You know, this
All right.
this new thought, this new statement. And when you, and as you do this, what you're going to do is you're going to shift your energy. And, and when I talk about shifting your energy, I'm talking about everything about your body is going to begin to shift into a higher place where you get into that highest place of all. With God, all things are possible. And you're going to start noticing and looking for things being on their way to guide you and to help you through this. And you're going to start seeing them. You know, they say when the student is ready, you know, the teachers will appear.
These teachers
have always been there, but you just haven't had a readiness level. Your commitment to signing up today is a readiness level, even if you don't think that you have the ability to do it, which, of course, you do. So now we go back to the second question. Where did these thoughts, not where did the addiction come from? Where did these thoughts come from that keep you in this addictive state? That it's very difficult to change these habits. It takes a long time. It's a hard struggle. What other excuses do you use?
Well, it's just gone back a long time, and it's the smoking was just a habit. It's hard to kick.
There it is. You hear it?
Yeah. The drinking is as I said before. It's a numbing thing. And it's stimulation, then it's numb.
And it gives me sort of a counterfeit kind of freedom, because all addictions are supported by this statement: I cannot get enough of what I don't want.
Yeah.
I can't get enough of what I don't want. So the place that this stuff, that these thoughts came from within you, you know. You have to be able to say to yourself, I chose all of these. These are thoughts that I have been choosing for my lifetime. I've been choosing these kind of things. Just take responsibility for them. And then begin to look at your payoffs. Now, the payoffs on these are really quite simple. The payoff for hanging on to an addiction is that you get to take the easy way out. You know, you get to take the thing that gives you that counterfeit freedom, you know. And so you get to escape, right?
Yeah.
You know, and you get to take the easy way rather than the more sensible
way. It's the easy way.
Yeah. Right.
It takes a lot more effort to do the other and to make the effort and to get out and exercise and do all of those things. And then, like you, I didn't run as much as you, but I ran 5 miles a day at one point. In my life, I know what that felt like. I know the tight feeling, the good feeling. I know all of these things. The problem is, I just have to do them. I need a kick in the ass, I guess.
And I've been listening to you, and getting
a lot of inspiration. I just have to do it. And
And the reason you haven't been doing it is because
laziness, probably.
Okay, I'm lazy. What's the reverse of that? Because I'm lazy is just an excuse. What's the reverse thought of I'm lazy? Because you can't be 100% certain that you're lazy, can you? Because you're not 100% lazy all the time.
No, I'm not. No, I get up to work every day. I do work my ass off every day.
Right.
You're right.
Exactly. So the reverse of laziness is the reason I do this is? What's the reverse of I'm lazy?
I'm motivated.
I'm motivated. I'm energized.
I'm energized.
Right. Okay, so instead of the reason that I do this, because you can't be sure of that thought, so now you reverse the thought and you say to yourself, when it comes to explaining why I continue to do this, I am energized to change that. I'm not lazy. You know, you just reverse it. And now you go back to, we get to the fourth part of the paradigm, which is the most important part of the paradigm, and that is... what would my life look like if I didn't have any excuses?
Fantastic. Oh, my God. Okay. Fantastic. Fantastic.
Okay, that's a great word. Fantastic.
Fantastic.
If you couldn't use all of the excuses that you have used to keep you stuck in this addictive pattern that you've been in, your life would look fantastic. Okay, now what I want you to do, Brian, is I want you to take that thought, fantastic, and I want you to assume the feeling of that wish being fulfilled. That is, okay. you are smoke-free and you are alcohol-free. All I want you to do is feel, what does that feel like in your body? What does it feel like in your body?
Oh, I feel I can breathe. I can get up in the morning and instead of just saying I can make it.
Uh-huh.
Instead of that feeling of I can get through and make it, I can feel very good.
Okay, so you feel in your body, you can feel. Now, so in your imagination, what you have done is you have created for yourself, because, you know, we're playing a game here where you're not, you know, what would your life look like if you couldn't think this thought? And so in your imagination, you feel fantastic. In your imagination, you feel fantastic. And the feeling that you get in your body from that imaginative thought that you have is... feeling good in your body, feeling healthy, feeling energized, feeling strong, feeling like I can get through the day. Those are your words, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what I want you to do, instead of thinking about the end, you know, and the end is, you know, you being in the state that you want to be in, I want you to think from the end. And thinking from the end means that you think from the place of feeling fantastic and feeling good in your body. Okay. Imagine it. So now you're thinking from the end rather than about the end. Now you have two choices. You have what I talked about earlier in the seminar. You have subjective and you have objective. The objective things that you're going to hear about what it is that you are about to embark on are going to be all kinds of reasons why this is not possible and why it's difficult and how hard it was for me and blah, 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 blah. You're going to hear a lot of that. But remember, in your gift that you have from God is your imagination. And in your imagination, you already are fantastic, and you've assumed the feeling of that wish fulfilled so that your body feels great. So now, instead of using the objective kind of stuff that's going to come at you about this and that's going to give you a reason to go back to your old excuse pattern, what you're now going to use is your subjective attention. And your subjective attention on this is, I feel fantastic and I feel great. No matter what comes up about alcohol, no matter what comes up about smoking, no matter how often you think about it, whatever it is, in your imagination, you're going to go to you're thinking from the end. You feel fantastic and you feel great when the subject comes up. Even if you slip, you feel fantastic and you feel great. Okay?
Okay.
Always. You don't allow something external to yourself to be the controlling way that you respond to this habituated way of being. Okay?
All right.
So now, every single time that this issue comes up and you're confronted with it, this is where you have to go. You've already created a rational reason to change. How are you going to access universal cooperation? How are you going to get God's help here?
Yes.
The way that you're going to get God's help is you're going to think like God thinks. You must be like what you came from. You didn't come from your parents. We all know this. We, you know, quantum physics teaches us that all being, says the Tao, all being comes from non-being. You came from non-being. You came from a world of spirit. God and you are one. You've just let the connection between you and this higher part of yourself become rusted with these habituated ways of thinking. The way that you're going to access divine cooperation is that all the time when it comes to this subject matter, is to think like God thinks. Now, tonight, it is now, let's see, it's 2:30 here, so it's 8:30 at night there in Toronto, right?
Yeah.
5 minutes before you go off to sleep tonight,
okay,
when you're in bed tonight, I want you to start reprogramming your subconscious mind. Instead of reviewing and thinking about how difficult this is going to be, I don't know if I can do this, I don't know if I wasted my time, you know, I'm talking in front of thousands of people, blah, blah, blah. What I want you to do is go to that place in your imagination where you're already there. You're already feeling fantastic and you're feeling great and you're energized, okay? And so just as you go off to sleep tonight, you're going to get 8 hours of programming. you know, so that tomorrow morning, you, your subconscious mind cannot make a distinction between the fear that you have that you can't do this and the idea that you're already there and it's already something that you are and it's something that you're doing. So now your subconscious mind starts to align with the highest energy of the universe, and whatever help and guidance and support and the people that you need and the right books and the right things will show up, and the people will tell you how great you are, and you'll start looking in the mirror and seeing, you know, what you want to see instead of what you didn't want to see. You know, your fingers won't smell the way that they did before. You know, it's all of this stuff.
Isn't that powerful?
Yeah, that's how the universe, how this whole thing works. And it's like, so you've got to reprogram your subconscious mind. And I'm telling you, Brian, you are smoke-free, alcohol-free right now. You are right now. You've got to think from that place. And as you work your way through this program, then you begin accessing this universal cooperation. And you're going to see, when I quit drugs, when I quit smoking years and years ago, I found that I stopped putting cigarettes in my mouth.
Just stop dead. Gum. No.
No, I did what I'm doing right here, right now with you,
okay.
Right now.
Yeah.
And it's how I quit drinking too. I quit drinking in a moment, and I drank every day for 15 or 20 years, and I did it in a moment. And it's like what I began to find out as I began to reprogram my subconscious mind the way I'm talking to you about right now, what I began to discover is that the universe started to cooperate with me. That, you know, if I was getting tempted to call and get something to smoke or whatever, the store would be closed, you know, or I wouldn't have enough money with me. Or, you know, it was like I started noticing that there was guidance available to me to help me, because my subconscious mind was aligning me with thinking like God thinks instead of thinking like my ego has thought. And that's where I think you can go, Brian. I see you that way myself, my friend. I see you that way. I'm going to be there in Toronto for no, that's not till next spring.
I saw you last March 2008.
Yeah. I think I'm going to be there. Yeah.
My wife and I are thinking seriously of going to Maui in October. We're just, I don't know if we can swing it, but we'd love to go.
Whoa. Say that again.
We'd love, we were talking about going to Maui in October.
And can you afford it?
With airline points and stuff, I think we can.
Even without airline points, is the money going to be available for you? One thought or another. One thought says I can't afford it, we can't swing it. The other says
I think we can make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Not I think we can.
I'd love to go. I'd just absolutely love to go.
See, as you shift your thought from I can't afford it and I don't know if we can swing it to I can, what's going to happen is the universe is going to start offering you opportunities to match up to what it is that you're thinking. We got to go. Excuses be gone. Yeah, I'll see you on Maui, my friend. God bless you. I love you. That was great.
To see you, and thank you so much.
Thank you. And congratulations, by the way. For the last hour, you haven't had a cigarette and you haven't had anything to drink.
Thank you.
And for the next hour, it's going to be easy.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, get a copy of this. Replay this over and over and over again, and you'll get it.
Okay, I will. We're going to see you in October.
There you go. And you'll probably, not only will you get the funds, but you'll get extra funds as well.
Okay. Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Great. Mm-hmm. My pleasure. God bless you.
It will work, and it is possible to have a future free of excuses to have the things that you want. And this online seminar will be available for download. If you missed any part of it whatsoever, or if you would like to just hear it again to have it regularly, you could listen to it all the time. Just come back to HayHouseRadio.com or HayHouse.com and look for the live online events. Just such great information, Dr. Dyer. I mean, I really got a lot out of just being able to listen.
Thank you.
It was great for me.
Yeah, it was great. He was a very wonderful, wonderful participant as well. Yes, I loved it all. I hope everyone out there had felt that they had a wonderful time and got something great out of it.
Well, the Excuses Be Gone tour will be hitting the road in September, going to L.A., New York, Chicago, a very special event in Maui, Boston, and Tampa. Go to HayHouse.com or DrWayneDyer.com for more information. And thanks for joining us today for the Excuses Be Gone seminar today.
hope you've enjoyed this online event with Dr. Wayne Dyer. To learn more about Dr. Dyer, please visit his website at drwaynedyer.com. Thank you for joining us today.